When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast with your hosts, the Wolf and Action Jackson, who are keeping rock alive by talking classic rock, hard rock, progressive rock, heavy metal, 80s music, early MTV, UK vs. US chart success, and much more. This is the home of classic album and live concert reviews, and your place for interviews with artists and legends. You're rocking with the Wolf.
Hey out there, rock and rollers. Welcome to the 171st episode of the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast, brought to you by me, your host, Mac B. the Wolf, and I will be joined, as always, by my co-host and partner in crime, Gary Action Jackson, from the East Coast of the United States of America. And we are very proud and excited to present this show to you all, as it features an interview and a concert review of one of the greatest progressive rock guitarists of all time, someone who we've done several shows on and have interviewed before. I believe it was episode number 87 when we first interviewed Steve Hackett. In fact, it was at the start of the Foxtrot at 50 tour, celebrating the Genesis album as it was turning 50. Well, now, thanks to delays from COVID and reschedules, he's finishing out that Foxtrot at 50 tour in America. And in March and April, he's marching all around the USA, and we really encourage you to see him. But this is a special double episode. So the first half is us speaking with Steve about his new album, The Circus and the Night Whale, which recently hit number one on the UK rock album charts, and ask him a few questions about how he puts the music together, how personal this story was. It's his life story in music, basically. What was like to remember all these things and put them into song. And then the second half is the two of us seeing Steve and his band live in Jacksonville on March 1st, the first date of this leg, the final leg of the Foxtrot at 50 tour. But what makes our date special is that it was the first time that he played these songs from Circus and the Night Whale live in concert. So not only did we get Foxtrot in its entirety, not only did we get some of Steve's great solo songs from over the years, but we got to be the first people to see him play Circus and the Night Whale songs live. It was a special night, and we're very excited about this show. We hope that you like it. Now first, before we get into that, a little bit of business to take care of. We always like to mention that we are proud members of the Pantheon Podcast Network, a family of about 100 different music shows. There really is something in there for everybody. You can check them out at pantheonpodcast.com or follow at Pantheon Pods. And we have to give a shout out to our sponsor, RareVinyl.com, who's based in the UK, folks. They also have an EIL.com site, but they have over 250,000 items in stock, and they have many, many classic Genesis and Steve Hackett items available for sale, whether it's first print LPs or imported singles, picture discs, posters, things that are hard to find. You can find it at RareVinyl.com. And if you go there, when you check out, use code UGLY and you can save 10%. It's a one-time code, but you can use it on everything in your basket in one checkout. So you go buy one Genesis record, you save 10%. But if you buy 10, you can save 10% on that as well. They have an amazing team who procures this stuff, catalogs it, keeps it in good shape, and then ships everywhere around the world, wherever you may be. And it doesn't just work on Genesis and Steve Hackett stuff. It's on everything in their catalog. But if you want to find that first edition Foxtrot or Lamb Lies Down on Broadway or maybe the Everyday single from Steve from back in the day, go to rarevinyl.com, use the code UGLY, and save yourself 10%. It's really a proud moment to have Steve on. Yes, a member of Genesis and a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but someone who has really gone his own way. He'll mention in here that Circus in the Night Whale is his 30th solo album, which means he's not only the most prolific solo member of Genesis, but he's also the one keeping the flame alive for the brilliant prog stuff that they did in the 70s. And he doesn't seem to be slowing down. At 74, he's still got it. And you'll hear that when we talk about him live. His show was fantastic. His tone was out of this world. So without further ado, let's get to it. The very special episode 171 with an interview with Steve Hackett and then a review of his live concert right here on The Wolf. I really like Circus and the Night Whale, honestly. I mean, I know we would say that to anyone who came to the show. Hey, I really like this. But I really do. His guitar on here, you mentioned his tone, but his tapping and stuff and some of the licks he pulls off are awfully hot.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you look at it, it's autobiographical about when he grew up. And so you would think, okay, maybe this is more like it will sound a little more old school, but it doesn't. I mean, it sounds rocking. Like if you didn't understand that it was supposed to be about back in the day, It's very hot. Yeah. He's playing some pretty hard rocking licks on this thing.
Some pretty sick licks. I mean, stuff that would make Eddie Van Halen say, oh, I need to go back to school.
Yeah.
You think it's hard to write something so autobiographical? I mean, to some extent, most all songs are fairly autobiographical, but to really kind of put together, this is kind of my life story in an album, that's got to be difficult.
I would think, especially if maybe you haven't thought about some of this stuff in a while and it brings back happy memories, it brings back sad memories. Yeah, do you want to kind of open yourself up to this? Yeah, I don't know. It could be, I would imagine that when it started off, like the initial thought of it to where it ended up, I'm wondering how that journey affected him. Because you're right. I mean, you can't just write songs. I mean, maybe you can if you're a professional songwriter, like for other people, you can just... But if you're somebody who's going to perform their own songs, yeah, everything has to be a little bit autobiographical.
Hi there.
Hi there, Steve. How are you?
I'm okay. Gary and Mac, right? Hi, Mac.
Good to see you again. It's been about
you too.
18 months since we last spoke.
Right. Yes.
And I've been a little busy in that I moved from London to Harlem near Amsterdam and then to Amsterdam and then back to the USA. And my friends say, wow,
okay,
you've been busy. I said, well... Have you seen Steve Hackett's touring schedule over the last
couple of years? Yeah, I know. That's crazy, isn't it? Yeah. You don't want to get like him. Yeah.
But isn't that what inspires you, Steve? I mean, between you and Joe, you've come up with these amazing lyrics and stories, and it's the travel to these amazing places that stirs the muse. Is that right?
Yeah. Places turn into music. They do. I was just in the Arctic Circle in Bodø, northern reaches of Norway, when they were having a hurricane. And not only was there snow, there was a hurricane, and windows were getting blown out. And I was jamming with Jabi, like I do, the Hungarian band. And we were wondering if there was going to be an audience at all, but they'd come out, you know. there was an audience, you know, for both a concert gig and a club gig that they did. And I sat in with the club gig.
Wow.
Towards the end of it. That was a lot of fun, I have to say. It was a lot of fun.
Excellent.
They're hardy people there.
They are hardy people. You're absolutely right. Yeah, crazy and hardy. That's what we have to be to live up to.
That's for sure. Well, now we have to talk about Circus and the Night Whale, Steve. I mean...
Sure, by all means.
Amazing album. I think it's about the proggiest thing you've done in maybe half a century, certainly as a concept album.
Yes.
And we're thinking about a couple of albums here who are about to have some big anniversaries that you know.
Of this course, yes, absolutely.
That you're going to tour on a little bit later this year and then next year.
A band with a very promising past and a young chap called Steve. Yeah, I know.
Yes, this young man. Yes.
That's off right, to do yes. Voyage of the Acolyte, yes. Which turns yes. 50 next year.
That's right. Yes, yes, yes.
Why was this the right time to kind of tell this story and put it into one big concept for you?
Well, I think, you know, having done an autobiography in recent times, that's the one, the Genesis in My Bed.
Love it.
The thing about that was it's not an audio version of the book by no means. It's music, but it's the story told in music, which I think emotionally probably has more impact than just reading off the page, because
definitely
being an author is not my full-time job. I've spent years doing something else to try and gain fluidity, so it goes hand in hand with that, and the parallels are not lost on me with Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, which is a double album, of course, but this one is a single, and it's really been designed to be the ideal length for vinyl.
Mm.
Because I, a couple of days ago, got hold of the vinyl version, and of course, The Whale's Mouth on vinyl is somewhat more huge than on CD. I mean, I love the quality of CD, the audio quality of CD.
Sure.
Who doesn't? But then, you know, when it comes to artwork and a big whale and the 45-minute album, as this is, you see, it was designed so that nothing would outstay its welcome.
Mm.
Everything that appears moves on very quickly. Guitar solos are hopefully not too long. Vocal tunes are not too long. Atmospheric bits, you know, they happen in brief. And I think, well, I was channeling various people and approaches with this. I mean, I was thinking of the late, great Jeff Beck.
Yes.
And so every time I went to the Whammy Bar, I was, you know, playing a steamy solo, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of him. Of course, he was in the early days, a very melodic player, even though working within blues and then within jazz rock. And then a return to rock later on. But that was extraordinary. And I was also thinking of, I was using one of the guitars on one track that Brian May invented. So I had a copy of his Red Special.
Oh, wow.
Which has got this thing, that the three pickups that he put on this thing originally when he built it. You can put the neck pickup out of phase with the other two, and it creates this kind of upper harmonic that you'll hear the good effect on the track wherever you are.
Okay.
In fact, when I played it to a friend of mine who did the video for the first track, People of the Smoke, he said to me, "This sounds like Queen." You know, that was the impression that he had from it. So not bad company to be in, of course.
No.
Another good band, bad company. But you know, it's see, this is the thing. It's I think all guitarists end up sounding like each other at a certain point. You know, I know that Brian was a huge fan of Jeff Beck, who I've mentioned. And when Brian and I were working together on what became Feedback 86, that was released a mere 11 years later,
right?
That, you know, he was playing me the same record collection that I had as a kid. We were listening to exactly the same Jeff Beck tracks, like Nazar Blue. That was the one with Eric Clapton, with John Mayall. It was Key to Love on that album, the track that started Outside 2, if you were listening to vinyl. And he brought in vinyl albums at that time when we were working together in the mid-80s. So it was that crossover, that time when everyone was being auditioned on cassettes that fell apart, but everyone was listening on vinyl, and CDs were kind of creeping in. You know, there was that.
Exactly.
There was that feeling. And now vinyl seems to be making a fight back. I mean, personally, you know, I'll always go for super clean CD myself, full bandwidth. I'll always go for that. But I'm surprised at the amount of people and professionals who are listening to vinyl, because they are vinyl fetishists.
Yes, yes.
They like the feel of the plastic. The temptation is there.
Well, and they want to see the artwork, like Emily Marsh's amazing painting that is the cover of this, really sets the mood and the tone for it.
That's right. I think so. You know, you got it, the sort of larger than life thing about it. And I was, you know, I was thrilled with how that all came out. So what I didn't realize was that, you know, with this idea of having brevity with solos and various appearances and vignettes and cameo appearances of things, so that you could have snippets of BBC radio circa 1950, the odd steam train, the odd baby's wail, blah, 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 all that stuff. I imagined that the album was much longer than it was, because normally I would stretch things out like solos. Sure. I've just been doing a solo on a Jarby thing and playing live with them in Norway as I was, and loving the track Buzzy Island. And they said it to me, Stu, another couple of solos on the same thing, you know, back at home. But somehow there's that thing when you're in the moment and you're going for it, and it's a club and it's steamy and it's nobody's career move. You're just letting loose.
Yes.
It's lovely to do the Albert Hall. We'll be doing that later this year.
Good.
But there are things that you'll do in a club. You'll take chances. And when it's, you know, there's a level of expectation and the royal box is there and all the trimmings, that's lovely. The accolades. Thank you very much. Yes, I'll take my knighthood now. Thank you very much.
Yes, of course.
So, but, you know, the thing about being in a club, and the guitar sounds really tight. There's that sound that electric guitars have in clubs. You can't buy that. You know, you just can't. Mm. The ceiling was low and the sound was tight. And I went off on one and just lost myself in it.
Beautiful.
I love doing that. Nobody's counting the notes you don't hit. It's the ones that you get and that you feel and you're going for it. And never mind perfection. It's not what I'm all about in those situations. I don't want to hold back. I want to be dangerous.
Well, you didn't hold back on some tracks like Get Me Out and Breakout. There are some double tapping, some extraordinary heavy metal shredders will be jealous of you from the work you do on some of these tracks.
Yeah, funnily enough, on Get Me Out, there might be one tapping phrase, but actually it's the nail instead of the plectrum.
Gotcha.
But I know what you mean about the one. Yeah, there's a bit of tapping on the other one.
Breakout.
Yeah, there's a bit. It's very short. I played bass on that as well because we didn't have a bass player at the time. We were just working with a drum loop and then adding a drummer later on. I just kept my rough bass part on it. We were running out of time, and it's funny because I'm nobody's bass player. I mean, I just doubled. I doubled the top, never asked me to play bass for you. I just doubled the top line on guitar, which was a melody, and went off on a few.
Well, you mentioned before that nothing kind of outstays its welcome on this, as far as the tracks go. There's a lot of stuff going on, but it's all very accessible. All of the tunes, they go along and really kind of paint a picture of, I think you mentioned somewhere, it being a movie, like you're trying to tell a story from start to finish. And I think that really comes through on this record.
Well, you know, I realized various things once it was done, and writers that I've admired. Okay. John Lennon said something phenomenally nice about Genesis in about 1972, 73. He said he considered Genesis to be true sons of the Beatles. Now that's from an era of what I think of as classic Genesis, when Peter Gabriel was in the band. Sure. And although, you know, that type of stuff was a kind of an abandoned place later on when you had the sort of MTV approved type things. But I think that probably we were in step with the spirit of a so-called psychedelic era where anything could happen. So we rode in on the coattails of the Beatles, just like the rest of the music business. And we were very lucky to have a record company like Charisma that were prepared to indulge us and let us develop and become whatever the band was going to be beyond the idea of it. Well, you know, I don't hear a career song. Where's your next hit single coming from?
Right.
And I remember all this sort of 80s thinking about where's the career song. And that's not a lyric that the great American public are going to be able to relate to, Steve, or blah, 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 all those sort of criticisms.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, if you want American, buy American. You know,
right.
If you want British, then go for that, because we went our own sweet way. And that's the time when it seems like the feedback from that particular Beatle was something that I'll always cherish that. And in recent times, I got something from Jimmy Webb, which was extraordinary. he's signed something. I'd said some nice things about his work, and then there was a bit of feedback, which is lovely. So two musical heroes, you know, feeding back. It's a great shame that John Lennon's not around anymore to be able to go, wow, you know, I'm coming up to 74. He would have been 84. Can you imagine that? You know,
that's right.
An 84-year-old John Lennon. It was, I guess, never destined to happen. But I think he had some idea that he was going to, that he wasn't going to last. You know, this idea of they're going to crucify me.
Right.
Not far from the truth.
That's right. And you mentioned, you know, hey, if you want American, buy American. A lot about our show is, from my time as an American living in London, the difference yeah. between why some bands do well in the UK but not in the US yes. and vice versa. And sure. even your song, People of the Smoke, which opens the record, yes. is, you're painting a very vivid yet gray and black and white picture of London
yes.
post-war. And,
yes.
you know, in America, people were affected by the war. My mother grew up without a father because he was lost in World War II. But
her
playground wasn't rubble. You know, the buildings weren't destroyed all around her.
That's right. Yes.
Like it was for your entire generation.
Yes.
It affected your entire generation.
Well, you know, they were in the middle of a rebuild. And I grew up in this place called Churchill Gardens opposite the Battersea Power Station, made famous latterly by Pink Floyd, Animals, Flying Pig, all of that.
That's right.
But, you know, in 1953 to 57, when that was the view from my bedroom window. Things were rather different. The two blocks that were built, first of all, with that huge housing development was Gilbert House and Sullivan House. So Gilbert and Sullivan, next to each other. Of course, yes. I had no idea as a kid that there was a musical reference there. And all of the apartments, the flats, were named after poets, musicians, Coleridge, Keats.
Interesting.
My God, Jane Austen. That you had all of this stuff. It was rather extraordinary and very, very creative. But the back streets were indeed full of rubble and bomb sites, and we were encouraged not to play on bomb sites. I didn't understand why. Nobody said to me, you might get blown up by a stray shell that didn't find its mark. But it was a dangerous time, not as dangerous as growing up in the war. Of course, my mother was in the war.
Is that right?
And she remembers doodle bugs coming down this thing about the sound of these things where they'd make a noise and then they'd go into silence before it actually hit. And this was a terrifying time for them when they were growing up. So she was evacuated, I think, first of all to St. Albans and then to Birmingham,
okay.
which I'm going to visit in a few days' time. Birmingham, that is, for a signing session.
HMV?
Not Birmingham, Alabama. Birmingham.
Well, that would be Birmingham. Right.
Birmingham, right.
And
of course, People of the Smoke, the opening track is, the smoke is a nickname for London. That's what they said. You know, from the 1800s onwards, they referred to London as the smoke because it was smoky, it was foggy. Those black and white movies with Jack the Ripper and all the rest, you know, that's pretty much what we grew up in. And that power station was the largest building in Europe, and it powered half of London.
Right.
Can you imagine? Now, that thing you can visit, if you visit London, and I know you spent time, you can go up inside one of the huge smokestacks. They had four of them, which they've rebuilt because these things were falling apart and they were dangerous. Now you can take an elevator, we call a lift, up inside that, and you get right to the top. You get this 360-degree view of London, and it's spectacular. I can see Sullivan House, where I grew up, on the other side of the Thames. So I'm looking back 70 years at the other side of the river, and it was so surreal doing that. But it's a great trip. You do have to book up beforehand to do it, but it's fascinating as you go up this thing inside this huge chimney that's got room for about 30 people. You know, from a distance, you look at it and you figure, oh, yeah, maybe those things are about 2 feet wide. No, you know.
They're massive.
Massive. The building is massive when you're there, because they have shops and restaurants and many, many other things to attract you. It's mind-blowingly huge. It was the biggest building in Europe. I'm repeating myself. There we go.
That you were mentioning about the Jack the Ripper feel.
Yes.
I think that really kind of comes through in the video that you put out for the first track. It's kind of a... it's evocative of that feel.
Yeah, the video is largely in black and white, and then there's a reference to a fairground in the middle where we have a cappella singing, and it sounds like Boys and Girls. I'm actually the only singer on it, but there's this thing where it goes into full color, and there's a celebration of all fairgrounds, of course, at that point. So it goes Disney for a bit, and then you're back into the pitched back into the world of industry and pollution and overpopulation and all of those things. London has been cleaned up a lot since then. You can actually see the sky now on a good day.
Yes, I love going to Primrose Hill and seeing the sky.
Yes, beautiful part of London.
I know you're now a Prog magazine cover boy.
Yes. It's
bragging about your 30th solo album, Steve.
I've become a pinup, but in the centerfold, I have my clothes on. And this is...
I guess we're thankful for that.
This is how it looks, folks. This is it. Okay, yeah. I mean, they've done me proud with this. They've given me such a huge... two huge articles in there. So if ever I felt neglected before, I could never say, always the bridesmaid, never the bride. Not now. It's changed.
Well, Jerry does a great job, and I just...
Yes, he does.
I had to do the math, Steve. I'm like, wow, 30? How does that compare to his former Genesis bandmates? And I added it up. It's you 30, the other four guys 29 solo albums put together.
Really?
Now, that doesn't include Mike and the Mechanics. That only includes Mike's straight solo. But yes, you've out-soloed the other boys put together. You are truly a master of the muse. I mean, you're like your buddy Steve Howe. You could have rested on all the work you've done, but both of you continue to, you never go long without putting out something new. You're true musicians.
Yes. Yeah. I gave up counting a long time ago. Someone was saying, do you realize you've done something like 700 songs? And I don't know if that includes Genesis, GTR, and all the rest. I don't know. I've shown up on a lot of albums. I just played on two things today, actually three things today. I was working with Roger doing things for people. One I had to really think about. The other two were just firing from the hip. But yeah, there is a lot of stuff there. But who's counting? You know, because if you think about Bach, and they say, you know, he wrote over 1,000 pieces or whatever, you know, and I'd be maybe way off here. These are only the ones that discovered manuscripts.
Right.
So you figure that he may not have been in a recording studio, but just in terms of having to write, I think for either once a week he had to come up with 20 minutes worth of new music, or once every 2 weeks. That's like, you know, half a vinyl album every 2 weeks to do some mass in a church, and then the church authorities would complain that the music was too complicated. Could he write something a little more simple? But you know, not everyone was up to that standard. Nobody has ever been up to that standard. That's right. The first jazz musician, the first real keyboard hero, although he had heroes himself. But I digress. I mean, I've recorded some of that stuff and I absolutely love it, but it's, you know, it puts you through your paces and then some.
We're going to see you March 1st in Jacksonville, first night of this U.S. leg you have coming up here.
Thank you.
As you wrap up the kind of foxtrot at 50 before you get into Lamb highlights a little later this year, what are the odds we're going to see or hear any of this circus and the night whale when we see you?
Yeah, I was talking to Roger about it today, and you know, we're thinking about them. There may be three tracks. We'll have to see what's doable, because the opening track is very ambitious. You've got industrial stuff, orchestral stuff, singing, guitar solos, babies wailing.
You can walk out to it.
Choirs. Yeah, it might be walk-on music. That might be the way we go. Because response to it has been way in front of what I had hoped for. The video is going viral of People of the Smoke, which is absolutely wonderful for me. I don't know how many is. When I last looked, it was like something like 140,000 hits on it. And
good for you.
That's a big deal for me, you know. And the other one, I think Wherever You Are is starting to catch it up. But, you know, people liked that video. And I liked it very much. I thought that Paul Gosling had done a very good job on it. You know, my input was just purely the music and a little bit of filming me apparently playing. That's it. Trying to mime away to some of that stuff. Yeah.
Well, it's not every day that we get to go to a concert where we've already got the live album of the tour here.
Yeah.
But we appreciate it. I mean,
thank you.
You serve your fans. If you're going to be a fan of Steve Hackett, not only do you reward them with new music on a regular basis, but you give these great documents of the tours you've done over the years, often with DVDs included, so you can see the show, or you and Roger cooking it up in the front room there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we've been busy. That's right. Chris Lord-Alge mixed the last live one we did, Foxtrot at 50. So he's the... And he did a great job on it. You know, we're very happy with that. Super compressed, super bright, and lovely, because it makes the vocals powerful, makes Nad sound as powerful as he does live, or almost as powerful anyway. And you can hear, you know, the harmonies with a lot of vocal priority to it. And I've been looking for that sound for quite some time with live albums. It's nice when they stand out at you. So I've been to Chris's studio, very interesting in LA, very interesting. He's worked with so many great people. It's extraordinary. Yeah, so yeah, very happy with the job there, in very safe hands.
Well, we can't wait to see you live. And I know you're going to go on Cruise to the Edge with your buddies from Yes here not too long after that. I saw something on the internet just the other day. I think it was a picture of you and Roger with Chris Squire and John Wetton on one of the cruises to the Edge, maybe doing All Along the Watchtower.
We did, yeah.
You participated in the tribute to John at Trading Boundaries. We're very big fans of John. As we let you go, could you maybe relate a story to us about John?
Oh, well, you know, John, oh my God, you know, it's a fallen brother. Mm. I loved him dearly. I think he knows that. And he would sometimes jam with me live, or I would jam with him. Sometimes I'd just play harmonica for him. A song that he wrote with Ringo at one point, I just showed up, did one take on harmonica, and that was it. And he was a truly sweet guy, phenomenally talented, and I miss him like crazy.
I can imagine.
I have three friends, but John was the first to go who passed. I'm thinking of Chris Squire, of course, which was extraordinary, and most recently Ian McDonald, who'd been so encouraging to me, having invented King Crimson.
Right.
And, and been stunning live when he was young, then to go and form Foreigner and have such great success with that. Yeah, I mean, you know, really tough to say goodbye to that extraordinary band who I got to work with live at different times. Crazy stuff, crazy life. Hey. I know, it's on the half hour. I live my life.
We appreciate your time.
Hour. Yes.
It's just wonderful to be talking to you. Thank you.
And we will see you March 1st in Jacksonville.
Fantastic. See you in Jacksonville. All the best.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Carl Palmer, and you're listening to The Ugly American Werewolf.
Well, thank you to Mr. Steve Hackett for talking to us a little bit about his new album, The Circus and the Night Whale, which just recently hit number one on the UK rock album charts. He joked about it at the show we saw. It only took me 74 years to get a number one album. You could tell he was very proud of that. And the album's great. Go buy it. Go to HackettSongs.com, where not only you can get the album, you might be able to get an autograph copy, and you can check out where he's touring.
as we release this, he still has about 5 weeks left in the USA on the Foxtrot at 50 tour. So make sure you go to HackettSongs.com and find out where he's coming near you so you can see him. And I like to think that Steve was a little more comfortable with us the second time around. He seemed at ease answering some of the silly questions that we may have asked. And I have to say that when he mentioned Jeff Beck, it kind of dawned on me that he and Jeff are quite comparable. Yes, they were in big bands when they were younger, but they've kind of gone off and done their own things and experimented with different things, whether it's heavy metal or blues or jazz or acoustic stuff, all the different things that Steve has accomplished in his 30 solo albums over the last 50 years. I thought Jeff Beck was a really good comparison to him. That just dawned on me hearing him say that. Now for part two of the show, we're going to review his concert from Jacksonville at the Florida Theater on March 1st. It was the first night of this leg of the Foxtrot at 50 tour, the last leg. But we were the first ones, among the first ones, to hear him play songs off Circus and the Night Whale, which is pretty exciting. So why don't we jump into that now? We recorded this live right after the show, right? So we came home from the show, set up the microphones, and did it while everything was still fresh in our heads. Check it out. It's our review of Steve Hackett live March 1st in Jacksonville.
Hi, this is Gary Kemp.
And this is Guy Pratt.
And you're listening to the Ugly American Werewolf in London
podcast.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
So, Jackson,
yes.
I want to hear from you before I get too much into what I think. My third ever Steve Hackett show, but it's your first. Mm. So you've heard me talk about it. Well, it was show 44 or something like that when we first reviewed him live at the Palladium. What did you think as far as going in there, what your expectations were at the end? Well, okay, let's do it differently. We come in down. We come to downtown Jacksonville. We find a nice dive to have a drink and a little food in. We get to the Florida Theater, nice old theater, and nice old people in the theater. At 50, we're the youngest 5% of the people there.
Correct.
But that's okay. Our seats were great. Well done on the seats. That
Thank
was
you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
And it's rare that we're at a concert where we already have a copy of the live album from that tour, you know, because the one from Brighton came out in September. So we were pretty familiar with the set, but obviously we're psyched about the new stuff. How did you feel like going in? What was your anticipation level?
Oh, the anticipation level was definitely high. I mean, you've hyped this up for a long time. You know, we've gotten the chance to talk to Steve twice now. So I was really excited. I was a little nervous only because this was the first show of this leg of the tour.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you never know when something's going to be off. Maybe even the band is going to be a little out of sync or whatever. But, I mean, right off the bat, they hit the ground running. And I'm sure if Steve were here right now, he'd probably say, well, you know, we did this or we could have done better. They sounded amazing. His tone was fantastic.
Amazing.
I didn't hear him. I didn't see them miss anything. It was just, it was darn near perfect the whole night.
It really was. I mean, obviously, those first nights, there's going to be some, I didn't plug that cable in, or, you know, yeah, we're used to this already being done, and now I have to flip these switches. I know there's sound check and all that, but there's no opening act.
Right.
So there's nothing, they sound bad because of this. Let's go ahead and fix that.
And even still, you know, if you've got time off, there's going to be a little rust. There's going to be a little, I didn't see any of that.
Nor did I. And look, these guys have been playing together a long time at this point. Roger and Steve are joined at the hip, basically, one would say. But I knew it was going to be great. I just wanted to see how the new stuff, because we like the new album.
Yeah.
How's that going to fit in? I figured it would fit in great. It wasn't going to be a problem, but how are they going to start? And all I had to say is, when we interviewed him, we said, he's like, I don't know how we're going to do it with the train songs and all that. I'm like, well, you could come out to that. He goes, yeah, I guess we could. And then they did. So I'm pretty sure it was our interview that convinced him to come out to People of the Smoke.
I think so. I think he was pointing at you when he did that. Like, this is for you.
Yeah, I mean,
you're
welcome. I can't imagine he would have just come up with that on his own. Or Roger either, you know. Said, what are we going to do? Well, let's wait till some podcaster interviews us and see what he thinks we should come out to.
Then we will make our decision.
But I thought People of the Smoke was awesome.
Yeah, it sounded good. Obviously you can tell the sound effects were piped in. I get that. But it worked just to kind of get the thing going, get the crowd going, get the show going. Sounded great. Little disappointed, gotta say. A little disappointed that Miss Amanda was not there. But it sounded great, and it really kicked the show off well.
I agree, totally, yeah. And his tapping on that People of Smoke is badass.
Yeah.
It's better than Eddie. I mean, I hate to say that, crazy people, but I'm telling you, it was awesome. And there's a song Breakout on the album, too, that has a lot of that stuff in it. I was kind of hoping they play that. You don't know what you're going to get. It's first night of this tour.
Right.
No one's ever heard these songs live before. So that's pretty cool that we got to...
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, we were the first people to hear People to Smoke live. Hey,
live.
That's pretty
right.
Cool.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, and I thought that was great. And it came off really well because it's the one I probably know the best because it was the first single out. They had a video for it.
Right.
And I watched the most, and then once we got the album, because hey, we get the albums before everybody else does.
Kind of have a little perk here.
There's perks to being the Wolf in Action, Jackson. That's the beginning of the album, and usually I can listen to an album for 20 minutes, and then somebody says, "Daddy, I need help," or, you know, "Mac, come do that." I'm like, oh, okay, fine. I got 20 minutes in at least, so I heard that song quite a bit, and I like it. And I thought that they killed it tonight. When I figured they'd do Circo Inferno, if only just for the name.
Yeah.
But that was pretty heavy. I mean, pretty hard hitting. Come right out and do that. And then These Passing Clouds is actually a little bit of a surprise to me. Like, it's a nice song. There's no lyrics. I mean, the vocals really in it so much. I would have traded Breakout for that, but if that's picking nits, that's what it is. Otherwise, it was still great.
Right. Well, we didn't get into that when we interviewed him, so he didn't get a chance to ask your opinion.
Which
of
one
that.
Would you do?
Right.
Next. Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't offer that to you, Steve. Next time you put out a new album and you're coming to America and I'm going to be the
test subject.
Yeah, the first show of the tour, I'll let you know what you ought to play. I'm sorry I let you down with that. But then, but it was funny because he came out, they come out to people to smoke, and then they do Circo Inferno, and then he does a little crowd work where he's talking about, hey, that was Circo Inferno, and, you know, it's some of the new stuff. We're going to do one more new thing for you right here, and it's called These Passing Clouds. They do it, and then he comes back and does a little more. And he seemed pretty genuinely happy that we liked the new stuff.
It seemed like it, and it also seemed like everybody there was familiar with it and wanting to hear it also.
Yeah. Well, and he said his first number one ever album. Now, it wasn't top of the UK charts. It was like top of the, they have like a rock chart or something like that.
Yeah.
And he made it to the top of that. So I'm like, that's cool. I mean, good for him. Because Genesis never got that high back in his day.
Okay.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
Sailing England, I think, maybe broke the top 100, certainly, maybe the top 40. And then Lamb Lies Down was a, you know, a double. And then he had the two albums with, it was with Phil as the lead singer.
Mm-hmm.
Wind and Wuthering and Trick of the Tail, although I don't think it was in that order. And then he split.
Yeah. And one of the guys that we were talking to in the intermission was talking about Spectral Mornings,
mm-hmm.
about how that's a great record, but it just, when it came out, that was not in vogue for the
time.
Right. So, yeah, it is, it's, you could tell that he was excited to kind of be recognized now for kind of all the hard work that he's put in over the years.
Yeah, you're right. And like the first time I heard Every Day, which I think I've said before on one of these shows, it's kind of funny that our seventh and eighth shows, when we really still didn't quite know what we were doing with all this podcasting stuff, we decided to treat it like, you know, Jackson's heard stuff in the years since we lived together. I've heard stuff in the years since we lived together. Obviously, when we lived together, I was like, dude, you got to check this out. We would listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we weren't in touch for a while. And every once in a while, there'd be something like, oh, this is awesome. You know who needs to hear this? Jackson. But we weren't in touch, so I wouldn't tell you. So I figure we'll treat the show like, hey, let's share what I've grown to love, which is really cool that I think Jackson's going to dig. So we did two episodes on Steve Hackett, like some on his Genesis Day, some on his solo stuff. And then within, call it a little more than half a year, I went to see him again.
Mm-hmm.
We did a show on him. And then less than a year after that, we actually interviewed him for the first time. So it's a pretty rapid thing, like, heard his name, know he was in Genesis back in the day, don't know a lot about him, to like, ooh, this guy's good, to like, oh my God, we got to go see this guy as many times as we can, you know?
Yeah.
And it was Every Day that turned it on for me.
Okay.
Because the Sum of the Parts, which I think was a BBC documentary, and then it came on like Showtime in the US,
mm-hmm.
showed this whole history of Genesis. And I heard some of his solo stuff on there, and then they made a 3-CD album called Archive, capital letter R, dash,
oh, okay.
K-I-V-E, yeah. which had all Genesis classics from the 70s, but then it would have Salisbury Hill by Peter Gabriel, then it would have Every Day by Steve Hackett, it would have Run Silent, Run Deep, or whatever, by Mike and the Mechanics. It would have In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins.
Mm.
Not to mention big hits along the way. And Steve wasn't represented a whole lot on there, but Every Day was on there. And when I heard Every Day, I'm like, that's a hit song. That's an awesome song. It's got amazing guitar work on it. Why have I never heard this until 2014 or 15, whatever it was? I was kind of bitter about it.
Well, better late than never.
I know. And so I'm like,
and honestly, that's the way I felt tonight. I'm like, yeah, like it's taken me a while to get here, but I'm glad I finally got to see him play live. And I'm glad that, I mean, the band sounded great.
Great.
I know that you could maybe say that Nad is trying to do like a Peter Gabriel impression, but he's spot on.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's funny to watch him, like, he'll play to the crowd. Like, he doesn't just sing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's doing things. He's, you know, miming to the crowd. He's trying to get you into it. He did the thing on the Watcher in the Sky with the thing in front of his eyes.
Yes.
The red lights.
Well, we'll get to that in a second, because that freaked me out a little bit. but first, all right, so after he does the new ones, he's like, okay, now we're going to get in some more solo material. And, you know, this is one from the most recent album, Surrender of Silence. And when he said that, I figured it was going to be Devil's Cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
I figured he would sub that out. Like when we were at dinner, I said, well, okay, here's what I think is going to happen. I thought he would take that out. But he didn't. He played it, and it's got a little tapping on it, too. It's really cool, but it's a little heavy metal-ish.
Yeah.
You know, more than proggy, I would say. And then he announced every day, and I wanted to stand up and go, yeah! And then everyone's like, okay, clap, clap, clap. I'm like, do you all not really know this song? This is the best song he's going to play tonight. Okay? It's not Supper's Ready. A flower? It's not that. It's a great song about a beautiful girl throwing her life away on drugs. Something we can all get into.
You get up and cheer for this.
Okay, but listen, though. I mean, the last time I saw him play it in the Palladium in London, he had Amanda with him.
Okay.
And she played that first set, right? So the first set is solo stuff for the most part.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe some Genesis stuff. And then the second set was the whole album. Only when I saw him, I think it was seconds out, they were doing the whole album.
Okay.
Which was pretty, you know, it's like an hour and a half of one whole album. But she doubled him on the guitar solo. Like note for note.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool.
And you know how like Rob and Jonas would go back with him for parts of that every day, like it'd stay there? Well, it was all four of them back then. And the thing is, what I didn't know, what Amanda told us, was that on the record, it was doubled. Now, it was Steve doubling Steve on a second track.
Right.
But
you are hearing two parts.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So she's like, so really, honestly, we're doing it the right way. I'm like, now see, that's someone who isn't an egotist, right? If like you take your best solo song and you let someone else share the solo with you, right? Like Eddie wouldn't let Wolfgang play Eruption with him, and that's his son, you know, and he can play it, you know, you don't see that, you know, it's not like Eric Clapton's like, hey, you know. Robert Cray, come double me on this.
That is one thing I even noticed tonight, that he seemed perfectly happy to step back and let everybody else play.
Yeah.
Let's see what there were. There was a drum solo. There was a bass solo. So their way, you know, I understand that it's a chance to rest.
Yeah.
But it genuinely seemed like, I mean, he knows he's great at what he does. He has no problem letting other people shine,
right,
and getting a little bit of attention.
Exactly. And that's, I think, why they will come play with him.
Yeah.
Because he's not some dictator who's like, spotlight on me, everybody in the back.
Yeah.
That's not him. He knows he needs them to put on a good show. Mm-hmm. So they're valuable to him. And they've been with him for a long time. Even some people come in and out, they always come back. But Roger's been with him for like, what, 20 years or something like
that. I think, yeah, something like that.
And he picked up Nads maybe 15 years ago. He's great. The whole rhythm section's great. And then Rob Townsend played the flute, at least two different kinds of saxophones, a little keyboard.
Like shakers,
bell shaker. I mean, you lose him, you gotta pick up like two or three other people. And here's something else, though. The set, if you will. The, like, is that a Chinese pagoda? The big red building kind of thing?
Yeah, there was something.
It's not really a character. I feel like it's a building.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. Like a Shinto shrine or something from Japan.
Something like that,
yeah. It was. I don't know how that fit in with the whole deal. It looked cool, but.
Yeah. I don't know if it's got anything to do with Foxtrot, or maybe, you know, it's, I don't know. They're going to do Lamb highlights later this year. They're going to shift gears and switch back to that for a while. So does that fall in with the Lamb? I don't know. It just let it look cool to me. They finished up with, they did a couple songs there, but the last one was Shadow of the Hierophant, which I figured that they would play. Then they take a break. And then, yes, beeline to the bathroom. And all those old people and bald people. We're in that bathroom line. And after it died down, I'm like, you know what? I'm starting to be one of those people. I better go. I did like the Circus of the Night Whale t-shirt, though. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought that was kind of cool.
All right.
If I didn't already have the album and the digital, I would probably have bought one. But, you know, when am I going to get an autograph? When I'm not, you know. I've got his autograph on like three things. Like, how many times do I need his autograph? But it's good that he has that stuff.
Hi, this is Steve Hackett. And you're listening to The Ugly American Werewolf in London.
Okay, then they come back, you know you're getting Foxtrot.
Well, he said that. He's like, hey, well, you know, we'll be back with Foxtrot.
Foxtrot and then, in its entirety. Yeah. I mean, or I think that's what he said.
Yeah. But in,
like, something like
that. Yeah. You knew that was coming next.
In the hole, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, yeah, well, we know that. And we, you know, we have the live album from Brighton, so we know how it's going to go. Now, in that first part, Nads stands behind Steve, between Steve and Rob, a few steps behind him. But for the start of Watcher in the Skies.
Okay, but hold on a minute, though, because that was a little weird. I said, what? Because, so Steve's in the middle, right? And usually it's whoever's in the front is the front guy, and then right behind them is the drums.
Right.
But, so you've got but the drums are now to his, well, I guess that would be stage.
His left, our right, yeah.
And then you've got the keyboards on the right. There's nothing in the middle.
Correct. On the riser.
Correct. Yeah. Right. So then, okay. So, yeah. Dark and then go.
And then go and say, okay, we're going to do Watcher the Skies. We know what's happening.
Right.
They start it with like a black light is kind of what it is, right? It's bluish, but it's a black light because it's making everything white glow. And because Nad's hair is so like blonde, silvery blonde, like it's glowing under the light.
Yeah.
At first I thought that was a hologram or a projection.
Yeah, yeah, or a picture or something like that. Something. Yeah.
And then I realized, no, he doesn't have the budget for a hologram. That's Nad standing up there, but I didn't know anybody could stand up there. I thought it was two risers. I think it was one big one, and Roger and Craig are on either side of it, and there's kind of nothing in the middle.
Yeah.
So he goes up there for that, and then, yes, he has some kind of, it's a light, it's a red and blue light, like those are his eyes, and he's watching you, that's the watcher, right? But it's also kind of freaking me out, you know, like, what's he doing up there? And then because it was thick, it's kind of humid and stuff like that, and the lights are a certain way, because the light would glow off his hair, it's almost like he had a halo around him. Like he's a saint in an old medieval picture or something like that. He kind of had this aura about him, like, dude, that's weird. How does he even do that? He's kind of an odd character anyway, so he's playing it up as it is. He's kind of acting and performing a little bit while he's singing. But I thought that that was cool.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting setup because Steve is the star of the show.
Right.
Right? But it's usually the lead singer.
Who is in center stage,
Correct. So Nad has to, he's got to play to the crowd, but he can't overplay. So I think he did a good job at kind of scooting the middle there.
I agree. You know, Steve admits he became a singer late in life, late in his career. But he's usually, he does some lead singing, yes, but usually he's singing along with the crew.
Right.
But I also like the fact that he would sing some of the weird voices on some of those Genesis songs. Like, Nad sings the pretty Peter Gabriel part, and he'd be like, oh, you know, that was Steve. So he can have a little bit of fun up there. But, I mean, Watcher the Skies was awesome. And I just thought that, you know, Roger does a great job, but I thought he had Banks sound down on that one.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded very recording correct or something. Like you would hear it on the record. Yeah, it sounded really good.
Oh, but no, one quick point, though. All back to Every Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, so without anyone to double him, Rob Townsend kind of doubled him on the sax.
Yeah, which worked really well.
Which was pretty neat, you know. So, I mean, and maybe he did that the last time, but all I could hear was Steve and Amanda. But I give him a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. He's a pretty damn good musician. But back to Watcher, and then, so he did that in the beginning. And then he came down to his normal spot to sing most of the song.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end, he went back up and had like, was that a wand? I don't know what that was. It was like a brass, gold.
Oh, no, it was a, I think it was a telescope.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Because he had it out and he was scanning the crowd with the telescope. That's the watcher. Yeah.
Yes, he can see you.
Yeah.
So is that about satellites? Is that about all the many cameras that are around London that are picking you up? I mean, don't know.
It could be, yeah.
Someone's big brother.
Right. They're keeping you safe.
And that's why he's up there with his weird little eyeballs sticking out at you. But I always liked that one. I mean, once I found it as an older person. Timetable's one I forget about. It is, but it's nice. It was good. Get Him Out by Friday, to me, though, is classic.
Yeah.
And when he's really channeling Peter Gabriel on this one, Nad. Seriously, though.
Yeah, because it's how he's singing it, but the way he's singing it, and like he'll do the vocals like where he kind of turns his head away, so you kind of get a little bit of a distorted. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's really good. I would be interested to see Peter Gabriel try to sing that now. Mm. I don't know if he can still hit those notes.
Yeah, he's Steve's age. I mean, that's asking a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we during the break, one of the guys said, like, Peter Gabriel can't do that anymore.
Yeah, probably not.
But... It was around this time that I caught Steve having a little bit of fun, like jamming out and like all over the neck and like using his hand, palm muting on it and stuff and hopping around a little bit. I'm like, he is spry. You could tell to me, you could tell he was glad to be back on the road. Like it's been a while since he played live like this with his boys.
Yeah. And I was a little disappointed because he was kind of standing in front of a riser.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really couldn't see what he was doing with his feet. But he was working hard back there because he was stomping a lot of pedals.
He did, yep, absolutely. And he was playing with that tremolo on that Fernandez.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, I think it was a pure Les Paul without a tremolo. Am I right about that?
That's what it looked like, yeah. He only swapped guitars like once or twice.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, to go through the Genesis stuff, he did have his tremolo there. Get Him Out by Friday was fun. And you can listen to our show on Foxtrot all about what we think about these individual songs. We're really more about how was the night, how was the show. And it was awesome. And Can Utility and the Coastliners I really like too. Those two, I kind of get confused sometimes. Just because they are on the same album, they are kind of back-to-back next to each other, and that's the way I've heard it a few times. So, but then the cool part to me was Horizons.
Okay.
Because basically everybody comes off stage except Steve, and they get him this nice nylon acoustic thing.
Mm-hmm.
He warms up for a second, and then he goes right into it. And that was his only solo, right, on Foxtrot, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so, yeah.
And I don't even know. He may have gotten another co-write somewhere. Maybe if everybody did a co-write. You know, maybe one of those where everyone got one. They usually didn't work that way, Genesis. But I like his acoustic stuff. The Under the Mediterranean Skies, as much as I like Circus in the Night, well, that's my favorite of his albums in the last 10 years.
It was cool to watch him play. First of all, just to hear him play by himself and just to watch him, you know, like you said, he warmed up a little bit. He was strumming up high, low. He was picking and also strumming forward. And just
showing off a little bit.
And like you said, you could really tell he was excited to be there. Like, ooh, you know, I get to play in front of people again. And just really having a good time.
Because I think he did a thing with Jabe not too long ago. And he did a Trading Boundaries thing where he did mostly all acoustic. I feel like it is.
Okay.
That he does up there, you know, usually in January every year. But this is like the band is back together. Mm-hmm. It's been a while since the whole band was together. And we've got new stuff to do.
Yeah.
Which is selling well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going over well. At least he seemed pretty psyched about it.
Well, and it seemed too there were probably four or five people sitting around us that had bought the CD that night or tonight. So, yeah, I think people were excited to hear that because, you know, usually you get to that's the bathroom break when the new stuff comes out. But, no, it was really
especially in that crowd. Yeah. Many bathrooms.
There was a lot of moving around in the crowd.
But they were very appreciative, and they were people who knew those old Genesis albums. Mm. And so when they went into the epic Supper's Ready, it's like, all right, let's strap in here, because this is 20 minutes out of your life. And I mean, it really is a bit of a roller coaster as far as it's intense, and then sometimes it mellows out for a while, and then Nat is singing and he's emoting too. I mean, he's using his whole body, but he's not wild about it. He's not like showing off because he knows the spotlight isn't on him.
Correct. Yeah. he's got to sell his part, but yeah, you cannot overshadow
Mr. Hackett.
Correct.
The guy whose name's on the marquee.
And the guy who's signing your check. So.
Yes, exactly. So that was fun, you know?
Mm.
And then when the dude, Narcissus, turned into a flower, it was about a dozen people said, a flower. In London, there were like, 100 of them. They're way into it. It's a little bit bigger place for sure. But that is one thing I wanted to look up. Like, how big is the Florida Theater?
That's a good question. I don't know how many seats it is. I don't think it ever changes, so that's a good... There is no other configuration for it.
1,900. So that's bigger than I thought it was, actually. And it was pretty well sold. By the time the show started, it was pretty well full. Yeah. So he did well tonight, yeah. But, I mean, what did you think about Supper's Ready Live?
I thought it was good. I mean, it's intense, and, yeah. and you got to, you, like you said, you got to strap yourself in and get ready for it. But it is cool to hear it played live.
Yeah, it's up and down. It's back and forth. There's some crazy stuff going on there. But once you know it, so you know that's the end of that set.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow, they finished it. It's heavy. More of a workout for Nad than Steve. I was watching Steve. Who did you watch? Did you watch Steve the whole time? Would you bounce around?
I kind of bounced around because there was a lot going on. The one disconcerting thing, and I don't know how I feel about this, is Nad would leave and come back. Now, he never missed a beat, never missed a mark. But so the thing is, when you're not singing, what are you going to do? Like, just stand there? So he's probably better off leaving.
Yeah.
But it was just that him leaving and coming back was a little disconcerting.
The first time I saw them, which is like, I don't know, 5 years ago or something like that in Cleveland.
Yeah.
That threw me a little bit too. It was maybe like 2017. It was a longer time ago. But the thing is, I was in the front row, so he would go off and I would see where he was sitting, you know, and like having a drink of water or whatever. Most of the people couldn't see that, but where I was, yeah. I could. And I'm like, so you just go back there and sit down, you wait for your cue, and then you saunter back on stage. Mm-hmm. And he's a saunterer, mm-hmm. let's face it. He would saunter back on stage. I'm like, well, how about that? You just kind of walk back and forth. But I get it. You know, Liam Gallagher sits on stage with Noel singing. He just stands there like a statue.
Yeah, that's a little... Those are your two choices. Right, exactly. Yeah. It's not like he can strum along... You know, I mean, I guess he does play the tambourine, but still, it's...
Yeah. I mean, when Arnell, when they would let Dean Crostranova or the other guys sing one of the songs, Arnell's backstage.
Yeah.
When Keith does his songs, Mick is backstage.
Right.
You know, you don't just sit out there like a doofus.
Yeah.
So I understand, because he kept doing it,
mm-hmm.
but I think he did the right thing.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that works better, because, yeah, you don't want to be like, stop staring at me. What are you doing? Yeah. And so, yeah, so I would switch back and forth, but it was mostly watching Steve play, because I wanted to see him do his thing.
All right, so then they finish that up epic. Everyone stands up. Woo, yeah, mm-hmm. so cool. They do gather at the front of the stage. Mm-hmm. But they don't bow. And Steve, it looked like he was trying to get a cigarette out of this. It looked like a box of cigarettes, but I think at the end of the day, it was gum or a mint or something yep. like that. And he was fiddling with it for a minute. Like, I think they're like, can we just walk off stage? Because it's time to do that. But he was fiddling, trying to get his mint or whatever it was. And they just kind of waved and walked off. I'm like, well... And this is funny. It's like, now the encore is expected, or it's rote part right. of the show.
Yeah.
Used to be an encore is like they're cheering, and now I think it just kind of lets them know. It lets the audience know, okay, we're leaving, but not really, but we are. But yeah. then when we come back, you that's when like it's really over. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because you know the house lights don't come on. It's still dark.
Exactly.
But I mean, that first break was... What was like 10 or 15 minutes, maybe?
It was longer than you might think.
Yeah.
I think it was like 20 minutes or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, so I'm like, what are we going to do now? But there wasn't really a break because they had the drum solo.
Well, yeah, right. So it was about, it was almost an hour, the first set.
Okay, yeah.
Almost an hour. Not quite. And then they take a nice long break.
Which
then,
I didn't have a problem with that at all.
No.
I did. It was because you had to rest yourself. Everybody mm-hmm. needed a break. Everybody needed a bathroom break. Okay, yeah. Now we're back. You don't want to feel like you're rushed. And you know what? Honestly, like, you just played the shit out of an hour worth of material.
Yeah, exactly.
Relax for a minute and then come back.
And it's a good break between, like, it's mostly solo stuff.
Yeah.
To full-on Foxtrot.
Mm.
And that's when Amanda would split. After that first set, you know, and then, you know, it's full on Foxtrot. You know how long that is. It's about 40 minutes or whatever it is.
Okay.
And it's the length of an album. And then, you know, take a break. All right, what has to be played? What has he got to play? has to play Firth of Fifth. Mm-hmm. That's his time to show off.
Yeah.
And they do come out to that to start the encore. And it was great tonight, man. It was so good.
I mean, it was spot on. I mean, yes. It was just, it's just amazing. And you figure too, like, I mean, he's 74 mm-hmm. years old, playing like it's nothing to him. And he, just to come out and nail that after 2 hours.
I know.
Is ridiculous.
And I was asking, like, what did you think of his tone? And you, the word you used that I thought was amazing was effortless.
Yeah. It really is. It's like he's not even trying. It's just amazing. Amazing to me that he can play at that high of a level with intricate stuff. Some of it's fast, you know, he's got the hammer-ons, he's messing with the tremolo, yep. And it's just like, it's like he'd be having a conversation with you about something else at the same time.
Well, what I saw tonight was him smiling quite
yeah.
a bit.
Yeah, he did look like he was having a really good time.
Yeah, I don't know if someone was down in the front to his right, would have been down to our left, but for a while he kept looking over there and smiling. Now maybe it was just a nice girl who was smiling at him and he smiled back kind of things, like, all right, she's giving me some good energy yeah. or whatever. But he was happy to be there tonight. He mm-hmm. wasn't like, all right, this is the 26th night and we still got 8 to go. He was like, I'm in Florida, I'm out of the winter, mm-hmm. band's rehearsed, I got this new stuff to do. And he was psyched about it, man.
I really think that he was excited about the reception of the new stuff. I think really tell he's really proud of that record.
He should be. Yeah. You know, it's his best in years and very proggy and yet accessible. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't have any like 12-minute songs on that. He even said, I made it for vinyl.
Yeah.
So it fits in like 43-minute or whatever it is. You know, it's not like a 70-minute CD.
Yeah, and the songs are, you know, 4 minutes and change a piece. Very accessible.
They're on the nose, yeah, yeah. You know. And then, yes, there is the drum solo, and we could have left maybe at the drum solo. But I knew, because I have the Foxtrot at 50 Live album, he does Firth of Fifth, he does the drum, they do the drum solo, and then they do Los Endos, and mm-hmm. it's time to go. And I'm like, you know what? We can listen to it on the way out. I don't want to be stuck with all these old people. Did you get my bag? I dropped my cane.
Plus, it's Florida, too. I'm very nervous about multiple people trying to pull out of the parking lot at the same time. It's the Demolition Derby.
Yeah, so great night.
Yeah.
Would you see him again on Lamb Highlights later this year?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm really hoping he comes through close to here. I would definitely go see him again.
Yeah, I think he does have some time at the very end of the year when he could do that. He could squeeze it in at the beginning of next year, too. Yeah. It seems that maybe he likes being down south here in Florida that time. If Cruise to the Edge is the same time, then why wouldn't he?
Ooh, yeah, okay.
So the way I see
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye out for that because, I mean, it seems like Jacksonville is on his radar. There's a couple of different places he can play here
yeah.
that are the size that are good for him.
And then he can play St. Augustine, too.
Right.
Which is it's a little farther for us, but I mean, for the community, it's not that much farther.
Right.
Yeah, and he's doing five shows before he even gets on the cruise around mm-hmm. Florida, Clearwater, Pompano Beach, making its way down. And I don't see Yes. Well, I don't know. Kiss has stopped their cruise, apparently.
Okay.
Is Yes going to wrap that up soon? I don't know. They're doing a tour of the UK this spring.
Mm-hmm.
They're working on new material.
Yes is.
Yes is. Okay. Which would mean a new album, which would probably mean a US tour. And then why wouldn't they do another Cruise to the Edge? They've got a brand new rhythm section.
Yeah.
They've got a young man whose voice is working in the range that Steve Howe wants it.
Yeah, no, so to answer your question, or to go back to the question, I would definitely see him again, and it would be cool to see the other set with the Lamb Lies Down stuff. Yeah.
Well, who knows? Hopefully, Will. He seems to be in great shape. He doesn't seem to want to quit. So my guess is, because he's got great dates in Europe and UK on mm-hmm. this already, my guess is he comes back to North America to give his Lamb Highlights, if not at the end of the year, and I'm thinking it will be. So he's in here, in America. 1st of March is tonight, as we're recording this. And then he goes through the middle of April, does a couple of Mexico shows. Then he's off to France, Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, does a Jabe show in Hungary in August. And then October, he's back in the UK. Ooh, he's doing a lot of dates in the UK. And now he's got about 5 dates in Italy into early November. But that means from mid-November through sometime in December, he could come back to America to do Lamb before the end of the year.
Yeah, right when it's just nasty in the UK. So yeah, that would be perfect.
Or he could say, great year, maybe I'll throw on some more European dates. And then once again, March and April, come back to America, do Cruise to the Edge, and do a bunch of Florida dates, and then we can go see him.
Absolutely.
Anyway, great night with Steve Hackett by the Circus of the Night Whale.
Yes, and if you can see him live, see him live.
See
he
him
does
live.
Not disappoint.
Yeah, he's got a lot of dates in America here these next 6 weeks. It's a great show. Don't miss it. Well, that is our double feature Steve Hackett episode with an interview from Steve ahead of his U.S. leg of the Foxtrot at 50 tour. And we did the interview ahead of his album, The Circus of the Night Whale, coming out. And then, of course, the second part was us seeing him live and seeing him debut songs from Circus of the Night Whale, including Circo Inferno and People of the Smoke, These Passing Clouds. It was a great night. Jackson had never seen Steve Hackett before, and I was happy that he got to see him. We had great seats. They were on, folks. They really were on. Steve was happy to be there. You figured there'd be some rust, but there really wasn't. They sounded great, and the new songs worked in great with the classic Steve solo and Genesis tracks that we all know and love. It's just a proud moment for us here on The Wolf. He's an artist who I really got into in a big way in the last 9 years or so, and now we're speaking to him live, asking about his new album, which is amazing. And I hope that you go out and buy it. And I hope that if you're in the US, you see him on this tour. Of course, if you're in the UK or Europe, he's going to be doing the Lamb Highlights show later this year. And you won't want to miss that either. So thank you to Steve. Thank you to the team who got us hooked up with him. And thanks to Jackson for going with me, getting those tickets. It was a great night for us. Great night for Steve Hackett and his band. So we want to know, folks, did we get something right? Did we get something wrong? Did we miss the point? Did we leave out your favorite part? Let us know. Email us at uglyamericanwerewolf@gmail.com. Let us know the bands, the albums, the concerts, the DVDs, the books, the rock properties you want to hear us talk about on the show. Be sure you download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're thinking about it, guys, hey, please go out and give us a 5-star review. I know there are a lot of Steve Hackett and Genesis fans out there who'd like to know about this episode. Go out there and put it out there. It just helps us grow the show, helps us find more rock fans like you. And if you send it to us or send us a link, we'll read it on the show. Thanks, as always, to Pantheon Podcast for making us part of the family. And thanks to our sponsor, RareVinyl.com, who has tons of old Genesis and Steve Hackett items available. You can use code UGLY to save 10% off your entire order. It's going to be hard to follow this one up, folks, but we sure are going to try. So stay tuned. And to all of you rock and rollers all around the world, be cool and keep doing what you do to keep rock alive.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com. Code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.